ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
In the words of celebrated author H.G. Wells, adapt or perish. He was talking about the natural world, so that means it applies to us humans as well. So are you ready to become more adaptable? Hello, Lisa Leong here for This Working Life, helping to make your work life better. How have you learned to adapt to changes at work? Tell us your story. Email thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. My guest today has survived some pretty scary scenarios, and it's given her pause to reflect on the importance of being adaptable. Andrea Clark is a work futurist and the author of Adapt, Mastering Change in 4 Steps. Hello, Andrea.
Hi, Lisa. So good to be here in the studio with you.
Let's start by hearing about your dad and how his approach to flying helped you learn how to adapt. Tell us a bit about him.
Well, he got his pilot's license very young, in the early 1970s. He ran a trucking haulage business in Western Queensland. We grew up in Gundawindi. I'm one of 3 girls. And so these trucks would transport oil from around the state. And at some stage, I think there were about 25 or 30 tankers running statewide around Queensland. So when one of them broke down, it was quite a big deal. And to get them back on the road, the fastest way to do that was to get in a light plane, land on a very remote piece of highway and drop off those spare parts. And so, you know, that saved a whole day's travel. And so Dad got his pilot's license really young because his business really required that of him in terms of, you know, keeping the business running efficiently.
Now, I mentioned scary moments. So there was a scary moment. There was a problem with the plane when you and your sisters were actually in there with your dad. What happened?
So we were flying. Dad was flying the 3 of us from Moree into the Gold Coast, and we were at about 9,000 feet, running about 117 knots in a Cessna 210, so a single engine, 6-seater aircraft. And we had engine failure at 9,000 feet. So really,
did you know what was happening as you're sitting there? How old were you?
I was about 12. My older sister was 14. Yeah, we were about 10, 12 and 14. And we definitely knew something was wrong. But it was what happened in that moment. It was Dad's response to that chaos that really was the lesson for us and for everyone that I share in the book. And that is essentially that, you know, he worked the problem. And what I saw happen in that moment was what he reached for and relied on to get us through that moment was his adaptability. So for me, that was the most powerful exercise in having an adaptive mindset.
What did he say to you? Because it was all nice chats until that moment, wasn't it?
Well, it's pretty loud in a single engine. So it's pretty loud. So you've got to speak, but you know, then we lost an engine, so it was definitely more silent. He handed my sister a map and said, "Find me the nearest airstrip to land," and which she did. And while he worked the problem, and I saw him quite intently looking across the dashboard, looking at the instruments and figuring out, try to restart the engine, and he did, but we were only at about 25%. Power. So I could see him figuring out how far, like what was the range we had. You know, we had about, I think, 50 Ks. So he was working out how do I land this plane safely in one piece while at the same time looking, how do I look up and out over the dashboard while at the same time working the problem and keeping us all safe. And we glided for 9,000 feet and made an emergency landing at a quite remote airstrip in Western Queensland. So it was pretty intense and a powerful lesson for me.
And you talk about lessons. So how did that hit you to be more adaptable in your life?
Well, because it wasn't IQ or EQ that he reached for and relied on in that moment.
IQ is intelligence, EQ is emotional. So what's AQ?
AQ is our ability to respond in untested scenarios. And what I saw happen in that moment was his ability to work the problem and apply new thinking to a new problem. And that gave us options.
Okay, so we're talking about change and adaptability here, and I asked you on LinkedIn to share your experience of navigating change at work. This is Kim.
Honestly, most of these days I'm just keeping my head down. You know, I've seen this before and I know it'll happen again, but I'm also living with a healthy dose of hiding, you know, doing the bare essentials for my job to get through until yet another change comes, likely within a few weeks' time.
Andrea Clark. This feels like a typical response to change. What are you hearing from Kim here?
What I'm hearing is what's very normal, that when we know change is coming towards us and we don't have the energy for change, we typically deny, we dismiss, we delay it, or we disregard it because it's going to require so much energy from us. And we typically attach change to a loss. You know, if whatever, like imagine you open an email from your boss now and it says, we're going to have to talk about some change. Where does your brain go? Right?
Loss of team.
Exactly.
Potentially loss of my role, potentially.
Loss of stability. Loss of energy, loss of time, a loss. And so we have to work quite deliberately. We've got to work hard to counter our natural default position on what change means for us. And what ADAPT is about is really recognizing that adaptability in its highest form is not only about reacting and responding, it is about anticipating and influencing change. It's about how do you be an active player in what's changing around you and for you.
Any quick advice for Kim right now?
Take a moment and think about what's most important to you. Like, what does success look like for you? And how are your values? Where are your values anchored? And what does that mean you pay attention to? Like, what can you pay attention to first? What's most important to you?
Now, apart from your dad, you actually spoke to another pilot about adaptability in your book as well. Do you want to tell me about Richard?
De Crepney.
Yeah,
Captain Richard De Crepney. Many of your listeners will recall QF-32 that blew an engine after taking off from Singapore. Enormous issue, enormous incident. And I spoke to Richard for 90 minutes about that. And what was so interesting to me was that he reinforced that adaptability is so fundamental to the mindset of a pilot because they're constantly training for change. And I wonder, why aren't we training for change in some way? So Richard shared with me, he said, you know, when the wind blows, are you going to build a wall or are you going to build a windmill? And it was his deliberate practice and his endless curiosity that helped him get through that particular moment. He actually shared with me that a few weeks before that incident, he was talking to the engineers working on the Rolls-Royce engines outside of London, because the more he understood about the engines, the more he understood about the aircraft's capability. So in a moment where there was chaos, he was better equipped and better prepared for change.
You're with Lisa Leong, This Working Life on ABC Radio National, and my guest is Andrea Clark, author of ADAPT, Mastering Change in 4 Steps. How have you learned to adapt to changes at work? We'd love to hear your story. You can email thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. Simon writes that personal networks and having an emotional support from friends, family and colleagues is hugely important, especially challenging in this hyper-individualistic world we live in. Liam says, my sense of is that we actually fear change a lot. But when it happens, we tend to love it, normally a few months in, and a smiley emoji there from Lynn.
Love that.
Now, there might be some people listening, Andrea, who are saying, you know, it's all good and well to say that we should be adaptable, but my organisation has announced a restructure and team changes. I've just separated from my partner. I'm looking after 3 kids. Yep. I need this job. I can't do anything else. So I feel anxious and worried. What's your response to that?
That's the story of every person in my network. Everyone's running on diminished reserves, particularly after the last couple of years. You know, my advice is focus on one thing, right? And the hype that AI is getting at the moment is profound. It's pretty out of control, right? So if you're worried about your job, let's take that, because job stability is so critical to everyone. If you're, just take job stability as an example. If you are denying or dismissing the role of AI in your role, I would say try to experiment with it in really small ways. Don't be afraid of it. Find out how it can make your life easier, because it really can, but that requires you to be engaged with that signal of change, and it requires you to accept that that is changing, and it requires some action from you. I really like thinking about how do I get out of my head and how do I transform a thought into action, because when we take action, that's what builds resilience and that's what gives us more confidence about how to step forward, even if it's a very small step. So, for example, if you've never used ChatGPT, get on the free version and start just ask it a question. Ask it to put a grocery list together. Ask it to bring some efficiency to your week so you free up a few minutes or an hour of your week to focus on what's really important to you.
We'll talk about those signals of change in just a moment, because you've got a really practical way that people can become more aware of these signals of change. But what I'm hearing from you is this idea of agency. Mm. How important is agency here? And, you know, that thinking that I am a victim here and you don't know how tough it is for me. Yeah. I'm hearing from you that we maybe have more agency than we think.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that for anyone who, any knowledge workers listening, the past couple of years has been an entire exercise in you having been given more agency by your business if you've been working remotely. And the question is, what are you going to do with that agency? So agency is knowing that you get to decide how you feel about things. You don't always have control over what happens, but you do have control over the way you respond to it. So if you lose your job, that is out of your hands, but how you rebuild is completely in your control. So, you know, the danger is waiting too long. We're always waiting for the perfect conditions to change, right? But we often don't have the energy for change. The best time to make a change is when you feel good. So agency for me is actually, if you imagine a box of matches, this is how I think about agency. You're holding a box of matches. The matchstick is the motivation. The box of matches and that strike panel, like that's empowerment. So when motivation strikes empowerment, you know, that is agency. You can't do anything without that ignition point. And the more friction there is between motivation and empowerment, the more agency you give yourself.
That's really resonated for me, because I love a good box of matches, I must say. Love it. And a candle. You're getting me excited. Now, as something practical then, do you want to run us through the what if exercise? Because I find this very useful.
Yeah, I love this. So when we ask what if, we're waking up our imagination, we're rewiring our response to change. And so pilots do this every time they get into the simulator. And Richard Decrepney actually shared with me, when he gets into the simulator and the simulator says, let's try to land in a 50-knot crosswind, he said, well, that's fine, but what if it's 80 knots in the real world? So let's run through some what-if scenarios and find the opportunity, find the challenge, find the growth in asking what if. So that really starts to reframe what's possible and also helps us think, how might things change? How might change play out? And I use it in very small personal ways. So, you know, what if that works out? Instead of defaulting to what if that goes badly? What if it works out? What if there's a better way to do things? So I find for me that wakes up my imagination and it tilts me forward. I feel like it's a way to imagine, to sort of blow open what's possible.
And what about the issue that if we're always paying attention and doing these what-if scenarios, it's kind of expecting the worst, and what is the difference then between being hypervigilant and pessimistic then?
I think it's very personal, but I think we need to, you know, maintain a reasonable amount of optimism, because I think optimism is critical to how we move forward. And I think reframing our perspective is important. So I think reframing is a switch, and it often turns a setback into a step forward. So, you know, we can all go down the rabbit hole of, digging that hole deeper to the negative. But you've got to remind yourself, you know, is that how you want to live? I don't want to live like that.
You talk about being proactive, but what about the circumstance where it's out of your control?
Sure.
And you yourself have been made redundant.
Yeah,
what did this teach you then about being adaptable?
Yeah, that was devastating. I had an amazing job working for an international aid agency. I'd just been to Iraq. I was working on programs to rebuild Afghanistan, Jordan, Georgia, and I lost my job overnight. And I was absolutely gutted by that. So I understood the reality of the painful situation I was in, but I had to balance that with optimism and hope. And I allowed myself to cry all night, but I said to myself at 8 o'clock the next morning, I'm going to get up and I'm going to hit the phones and I'm going to call everyone in my network and say, I really need your help. This is when I was in Washington some time ago. And so it's that paradox that we have to maintain, you know, and that's real. So we understand how difficult the circumstances are, yet we back ourselves to get through it.
You're with Lisa Leong, This Working Life, ABC Radio National. Andrea Clark is my guest. She's the author of Adapt, and we're asking you, how have you learned to adapt to changes at work? You can email thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. Let's do some practical things now. So you spoke about signals of change, and we recently did an episode on weak signals at work, but you have a really good way to help us develop scanning habits. So it starts with a signals folder. Can you run me through that?
Yeah, sure. So this is a very useful exercise to run with your team. So what we talk about is scanning for signals and getting a couple of people together, because we all see different things and we're all looking for signals in different ways. So the value of this exercise is not just saying, hey, I saw this signal of change across the marketplace that might impact my business. The value is not just recognizing what that signal is, it's what is everyone else around me seeing and where are they looking for signals, and where can we start to look for signals in new places and not just those sort of standard places that we always go to. So that might be something as simple as not watching or listening to the same news program every day. Let's listen to something that gives us a broader perspective.
Beautiful. And then what do we do once we've basically collated all of these things? What sort of filter do we use with it?
Well, I think it's about being realistic. And so let's just take the workplace, for example. I mean, if you've got a job and you are working as a knowledge worker and AI, everyone's like, there's so much conversation about AI. The difficulty in moments like this is, how do I find the truth about AI? And we talk about finding the credible edgies, like the people who are on sort of almost the outskirts and the margins of our industry. What are they saying? Who are they following? I go straight to those people because that helps me curate my feed. Dominic Price, who wrote the Forward Work Futurist at Atlassian, I follow Dom because I know Dom has curated his feed very, very well. So that can help me narrow down the signals that I need to be paying attention to.
And I also think going outside your industry as well is really useful. So rather than sort of the echo chamber of your own life, actually going outside and then asking that question that you have in your book, which is, so what? So you've got all of these signals. You know, which one should I pay attention to?
That's right. Exactly.
Beautiful. Let's go to the anti-role model. I think this is really useful. You learnt this lesson really, or it came to the fore in one of your newsrooms.
And look, I love a good newsroom. Love a good chaotic, loud newsroom, don't we all? That was such a gift growing up, such a hugely important part of my career. But there was one moment in DC when I remember someone yelled at me and I thought, oh, you know, it was the first time that I ever stopped and thought, do I want to be that person? Like, is that where I'm heading? And I think that recognizing those anti-role models is just as powerful as recognizing the people that we do want to follow. Because
why did the penny drop specifically then? Because you got screamed at a lot, apparently, in the newsroom. So what happened that made you go, actually, this is not what I want to be?
Well, there's a lot of distinction between healthy debate and being yelled at in a way that actually kind of wakes you up to, is this my reality? Because I was asking, what if I stay here for another 5 or 10 years? Am I going to end up being that person that's not probably necessarily that happy and barking orders and, you know, without any respectful, you know, there was no respectful dissent. Like, I love a good argument and debate in a newsroom, but you know when it's going to be too far. So I think it was age as well. I was at that point where I was working so hard for not very much money, and I recognised that there were signals about the industry and that the industry was changing, which I talk about in the book. So for me, it was a kind of a culmination of, what if I stay here for another few years, I'm probably not going to go where I want to go.
So how do you use the anti-role model for adaptability then?
Well, I think that I prompt readers to rethink their role models and consider, what makes a good role model for you? Are you being inspired? Is that person showing you what's possible? Are they serving as a behavioural example of success? And I think having an anti-role model creates a stronger axis of values. And so, are you aligned with that role models' intentions, with their behaviours? And just quickly, I interviewed Lance Armstrong once when I was in the US, and there was, he actually quite deliberately embarrassed me in front of a huge room full of reporters when he was announcing his sponsorship with Discovery Channel. And I remember thinking, this is not someone who, like, I was in admiration of this person before I walked in the room, but the way he's treated me, you know, there's no respect, there's no humility, there's no integrity. And I was so uncomfortable with his use of power in that moment. So, you know, and it didn't make me feel good about myself. So he went from role model to anti-role model in 5 minutes because of his behavioural examples that particular day.
We're talking about how you adapt to change, and I've asked you about your examples. My guest is Andrea Clark, author of Adapt, Mastering Change in 4 Steps. We have a text message saying from Marianne, I used to be energised each time a change at work was announced. I became cynical, disillusioned each time change implementation was so poor it was damaging. I adapted by making myself detached, dispassionate. Trade-off was that without passion, I became bored and depressed. Andrea, any advice here?
That does not sound amazing at all. I think that leaders in a workplace, real leaders, don't just introduce change for the sake of it. They make sure that it serves a real purpose. And so, again, I think I'd link that back to a role model. Is that the kind of person you want to be following as a leader?
Let's go to unlearning now, which is another practical thing that we can do. What is this? What concept?
Well, unlearning is about letting go of outdated beliefs, concepts, habits, information, knowledge that's no longer fit for purpose. So this comes in under this sort of release discussion, and that is, what do you need to let go of in order to move forward? And we all know that we're hanging on to something that we should probably let go of because it's taking up very valuable brain space that we need. We need all that energy to move forward. And so...
So what little things do you do to unlearn?
When I get an email from someone that has a Hotmail account, I think... Come on, mate. Like, it's 2025. Like, if you
change that up.
How's MySpace working for you? You know? So, this could be as simple as a piece of technology. Like, what's a piece of tech that you need to let go of that's no longer fit for purpose? That's an analogy. You know what I'm talking about. But, you know, are you.
Even changing up your coffee order, I hear. You know, will change things up.
Or how long have you been ordering the same coffee? This is a really simple way to start kind of creating that mental flexibility. Even 2 days a week, I say, order a different coffee.
Oh, you're scaring me.
I know. But that's how we start really small ways. And we're addicted to sameness. We're addicted to our routine. So it's up to us to interrupt that script, even in very small ways.
So in 30 seconds or less, what is your final piece of advice, Andrea, for those of us wanting to learn how to master change?
I think that we have to make a decision about how we're going to deal with change because we all know there's a lot more change coming at us. So do you want to be ready or do you want to be reactive? That's my question for the listeners.
Thanks so much, Andrea. Andrea Clark there, author of Adapt, Mastering Change in 4 Steps. We'll put up a link to our previous episode on change with HR and culture expert Ashley Goodall. It's called What If Change Isn't All It's Cracked Up to Be in our show notes. It's a great listen. Next up, try this. It's results time. Okay, it's time for Try This. This is our weekly experiment where you try something new and you report back. So last time we told you about a reflection exercise and the one I gave you was a retrospective process. It involves sticky notes to try. I wrote about it on LinkedIn and I asked, after a big project, do you take the time to review how it went and what framework do you use? Kate wrote, I love a good sticky notes activity that gets the conversation going. Rose says, reflection is so crucial for the self-regulation of learning and well-being. Love this. And Ian said, perhaps not for formal retrospectives, but I use a lot of the following statements that people can fill in the blanks. I like, I wish, ... and I wonder. And I'd forgotten about this beautiful way. It is such a good way to get open reflections. I like, I wish, I wonder. Well done. For this week on Try This... What are you going to change up this week to build your adaptability, like Andrea Clark suggested? For example, you could break the habit of ordering the same coffee, or maybe learn how to do things with your non-dominant hand. Make a small change and report back to us, thisworkinglife@abc.net.au. Big thank you to listening to This Working Life with me, Lisa Leong. It was produced by Michelle Weeks and engineered by Elise Simons. We're on the lands of the Wurundjeri people in Melbourne. You can meet me here again next Friday, live from 11 o'clock Eastern Daylight Savings Time. If you haven't already, search for This Working Life on the ABC Listen app. Tap the heart to follow all of our stories. Until then, love your work.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.